It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 687. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. Please leave me voicemail on Skype at miketechshow, all one word. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. And also facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial. And you can also go directly to instanthousecall.com. Also, a reminder to get your tickets. Do not be shut out of going to TechCon Unplugged 2019. It's in Grand Rapids, Michigan, September 20th through the 22nd. I will be there. Carrie Holzman will be there. Your favorite podcasters from the Podnuts Network. Meals are all included. It's only $200. It's inexpensive to stay. It's just 9 minutes from the airport. Take a look at this, techconunplugged.com. I hope to see you there. Great show lined up for tonight. Going to briefly talk about World Backup Day, which is Sunday, March 31st. Upgrade stories from the trenches, BitLocker with TPM 2.0, and then making an advanced TCP/IP topic simple. Have some great links. And then a stack of email if we have time, because I have a lot of stories. Let's begin with Sunday is World Backup Day. The first link in the show notes will literally be www.worldbackupday.com. And they ask that you take the pledge. Now, I know if you're a listener to this show, you are backing up your data. But you may have clients that need to hear this. The pledge is, I solemnly swear to back up my important documents and precious memories on March 31st. I'll try to Facebook and tweet that on Sunday, but I would definitely promote that to your clients and then tell them that you can easily help them with their backup strategy and that you will pick the proper solution in order to make sure to guarantee that they can recover from any disaster or any problem. So I didn't even know there was a World Backup Day, and I happened to see that, so that's pretty cool. Now, some stories from the trenches. So last Saturday, my son and I, we were upgrading a lot of computers at a dental office. This is a new client, and we had a dozen solid-state drives that we were going to clone the mechanical drive across various brands of systems. We have three new systems that we're installing, and then we just got to migrate the data from the existing computer. The solid-state drives were a big challenge because the original systems, and especially seven exam rooms, the Lenovo computers, desktops, were on top of a cabinet that we literally had to have a stepladder in order to get into the computer. I still have my broken left foot, so I'm not climbing the stepladder. So my son had to get up, unplug everything, bring the system down, then hook up the SATA connection to the SSD. Don't cover it up. Put it back because that's where the connections to the monitor and the keyboard and the mouse, which were huge cables running through the wall to a wall-mounted monitor. It was very nicely done, whoever did this, but not convenient if you're going to be doing maintenance or work on these systems, made it very difficult. So we had to do that, put a USB stick in, and clone. And each of these seven computers presented a unique problem, even though they were all the same model. Now, they were all Windows 7, and right now we're just cloning them to the solid-state drives to get them faster. They all have 8 gigs of RAM, and they're all at least Core i5 or greater. So they're not real new, but they're enough where we can definitely slate them for a Windows 10 from scratch install down the road. So before the new year, so this way they can remain HIPAA compliant. Each system took a different USB to possibly boot from. We had massive problems in just trying to get them to boot. And then finally, when the clone was beginning, it took forever. We normally, with a SATA to SATA connection, well, at worst, it's a half hour. We're talking an hour and a half to 2 hours per system. So we quickly had as many systems as I had USB sticks created. I could have created a few more. We had at one point 8 of the 12 systems cloning. And then when the first 4 finished, we took those sticks out and started with some other computers. And then I did the workstations that needed the migration and got them going. And then, of course, took out the hard drive of the old system and then used FABs Auto Backup to get all of the data and all the settings over. Luckily, they live off the server, so there wasn't a lot of local data. But my son and I were there 11 hours working on Saturday. It was a long day. And we knew that, and we knew we would be trapped in this office all day. So we had the foresight of bringing water and bringing a little portable cooler that we had, you know, some sandwiches for lunch and a snack. We were able to hydrate and eat, and we're able to keep going because I was kind of worried about that being on site all day. And we could have came back on Sunday, but we really wanted to just push through and get finished on Saturday because Sunday I was just wiped. I went to bed early. I had to recover from Saturday. And it took literally a couple days. When you're working like that and you're working all day and you're up and down, even I was on the ladder a little bit. And because then after the clone's done, now you got to bring the system back down. So you got to go up the ladder. You got to bring the system back down. And now you got to mount the SSD, take it back up, hook it all up, cross your fingers and hope that it booted with no trouble. That's kind of tough, you know, when you're doing that consistently for all those hours. But we got through it. Everything's great. Another job, which was interesting, when we go to clone a drive, and if it's encrypted, we always decrypt it. So this was a financial advisor that the night before I logged in and we decrypted from BitLocker and un-BitLockered the boot drive. Then the next day, we were on site and we tried to do a clone. Something we ran into with this Optiplex, and it's so funny, almost every computer we've touched over the last couple of weeks had some kind of an issue. Either this particular USB that we had that we know works on multiple systems just wouldn't work. We found that we were having trouble booting from a USB 3 port. The BIOS would not detect to boot from the USB unless it was in a USB 2 port. Well, that took a little bit of figuring to kind of trial and error, work our way through that, but we finally got it going. And we finally got it cloned. And luckily, while that was going on, I had a peer server that I was upgrading to Windows 10 because we had to get BitLocker. So we had to do Windows 10 Pro. And doing from scratch, Windows 10 Pro is a piece of cake. You can install it in minutes, literally. We don't mind doing that on site if we had to. So their peer server, I took out their 2 terabyte mechanical drive, had another one to just pop in there, and then started a fresh Windows 10 install. It activated automatically, and then I was able to transfer the data and piece of cake.
So tonight
I have two systems for a insurance company, a small insurance agent, that we're bringing two new computers tomorrow, and they both have BitLocker on their existing computers. So I literally before the show tonight, I remoted in and started decrypting the two computers, because tomorrow we're going to install the new computer. Then we're going to pop out the hard drive, put it in a dock, use FABS Auto Backup 7 Pro to transfer the data, and then install new software, whatever we have to install. We already have Office on the two computers. So really, it's going to be some custom software that this particular insurance agent needs, and we'll get them installed. And then they have they also have a peer server that, you know, we will connect to and map the drives and the multifunction printer that they have, install the drivers, make sure scanning's working. So that will be tomorrow's work, which already started tonight in prepping for that. So we get a call this week, a CPA, one of their laptops just starts acting up. And they said, Mike, we wanted to see maybe an update was happening. It's Windows 10 Pro. And the problem, they couldn't click the start menu and they could not click and get settings. So I remoted in. Instant house call was working and they had internet access with no trouble and browsers worked, but a lot of the functionality of the desktop they couldn't do. So I tried everything to launch settings, could not do it. I was able to create another account from the command line, made sure it was in the administrators group, and then logged on as that account. I remember running into this a long time ago when Windows 10 came out, where we had this similar problem and we had to run updates from another account. And then the original profile, the original account worked. No joy here. We could not, even with this new account, we couldn't get it going. So another link for tonight, and there's a double reason for this link. This is downloading your Windows 10 software. This link contains two other links. One is to update now. This will get you the Windows 10 October 2018 update. Then there's a link below, which is to create the Windows 10 installation media. This is the media creation tool. The problem with the laptop, I went to this site, selected update now, and just let it go and update whatever needed to be updated. You know, an hour later, the update and reboot, both accounts worked perfectly. We were able to get in the settings, everything. It fixed the problem. Now, this client is a good half hour, 45 minutes away. So we were going to, if this did not work, then we got to go out there, pick up the laptop, bring it back, just blow it away, redo. We knew that the system would boot and it would read an external drive. So we were always know we were able to get the data. That's not a problem. And there's not a lot of local data on this machine anyway. But an interesting thing to try, which is if you're having strange problems, just get it to the latest Windows 10 build. Because that's going to be fixing a lot of system files, and maybe there was an update that was stuck that's causing this. Something to try for the Windows update. For the media creation tool, this is going to lead into the next topic, which is, what if you have TPM, this is for security, 2.0, and you want to have BitLocker on the latest build of Windows 10 Pro? This is a problem. And I have some emails, and I've been emailing back and forth Cormac from Crosshaven Computers. And he ran into this a while ago and asked me to do a show topic on this, and I never got around to it. But you know those two systems that's going to be installed tomorrow? We had trouble getting BitLocker on. Now, we put solid-state drives in, did Windows 10 from scratch, but, and here's the valuable lesson. We did not use UEFI to boot from the USB stick. We used a legacy boot, and you don't want to do that with Windows 10. You really want to use UEFI. BitLocker would just say, and it would report that your startup is incorrect and that you were unable to encrypt the system. So these are the steps that I found. And then I'm going to read what Cormac used to solve the problem. Now, I did it without buying any software or using anything that was not standard. I used the media creation tool. We boot it from the USB stick and select it when you have your chance. Instead of the legacy boot from the USB, we boot it UEFI for that USB stick. We boot it. We blew away the install that was on the machine. Installed Windows 10 from scratch. Then we made sure in the BIOS that we activated TPM. So you got to make sure that that's activated. Then once you boot, you can go in the control panel, pick BitLocker, and you are able to encrypt the drive. So we were able to do it, but the key is booting in UEFI and making sure the legacy boot is turned off and disabled in the BIOS and just be straight UEFI, and then you can get BitLocker on the systems. Here's what Cormac found. When he ran into this problem, he had to use Rufus, a utility, to build the Windows Media Creation tool to actually build what he was going to install with a GPT partition, and it worked. So he had to do a full reinstall with over 100 gig and 30 gigs of PST files. And then that's how he ran into the problem. And then for the encryption. Now, we were lucky that these were newer systems. There was no data on them. We were taking out the mechanical drives and putting in a new solid state drive and doing Windows 10 from scratch anyway. But my son had did the two Windows 10s with legacy boot, and then BitLocker didn't work. So now our procedure is it's got to be UEFI going forward, because you never know if you need to turn on BitLocker at some point and you don't want to have to redo the whole system again. Just a word to the wise, a lesson. I'm going to look up and try to find a link to Rufus and also have that into the show notes. I want to thank Cormac. We went back and forth a little bit with that. This week, two things when my son was on site with a client. The first one, he ran into a client that just moved. We got this referral from a financial advisor, and we've never worked with this particular client. And he actually has a couple disabilities, but he's able to use the computer. He moved, and it's been a month or two since he moved, and he's not set up the computer. So he needed help getting it all set up. When my son got the computer set up, the client was dial-up. I didn't even realize, I guess there has to be still dial-up available and using AOL to connect. I didn't even know that was possible. My son has never even seen that. And he's 36, because he's always been now working on everything modern and updated. And it was just like the same time when he ran into the client that had Windows 98. So he didn't have the experience with working with that. When my kids were growing up in my house, the systems were already done for them. They would just go online, go on the internet, open up Office or Word or PowerPoint, whatever they needed, or maybe play some games. But the inner workings of everything in the operating system and getting anything set up and installed, they didn't have to worry about, and they never explored it. Dial-up, my son was able to convince him, since he already had Verizon and Fios was available. This was early last week. He convinced the client to get the slowest speed of Fios, and they came out, and my son went back out, made sure it got connected, and he's set. You know, we made sure he has the proper anti-malware and proper security set up. It was just funny him running into dial-up. The second thing he ran into was Comcast was updating a router for a corporate client, small client in Center City, Philadelphia, with just, you know, a handful of users, but there were custom settings. So we had to be on site, because Comcast, God forbid that they could touch and do anything on the LAN side of their config, they are not allowed to touch it. So they actually had to reschedule this. The one day I figured no problem. They can just change this. And oh, by the way, for DHCP, just go from 2 to 200 because we got some static IP addresses above. So we don't want it to be the default 2 to 254 like it is for Comcast. Well, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't touch it. They said, we have to reschedule. They would rather reschedule than take 2 minutes with me on the phone and them editing that. They would rather reschedule and then have us come down, pay an exorbitant parking fee, which I got to pass along to the client, and then go in and update. Here's the thing my son did not understand. He took a picture of the TCP/IP info and he said, Dad, the public IP address had a /30 at the end of the IP address. And so my brain goes and I said, oh, if it's a /30, then the subnet mask has to be 252, I believe. Is it 252? Yeah, it's 252. And you only get 2 IP addresses. He didn't understand that. The link for tonight, and I think this is an important link if you need to understand TCP/IP and the classes of IP addresses. This is just a tremendous link because there's a chart that calculates and does all of this for you. So you know exactly when you see, let's say, a /15, you know that the subnet mask is 255.254.0.0 because you look at the chart and then you know exactly how many IP addresses you're going to get. Now, a very common one that I run into is when they, like Verizon, when they sell you a block of 5 public IP addresses, and that's always what they call /29, which is .248. So what does this mean? It's a way of breaking down how many IP addresses you're going to be assigned in that class. I could spend weeks teaching you TCP/IP. I want you to look at this TCP/IP guide on IP classless addressing block sizes, because you have the number of bits for the network ID, the number of bits for the host ID, the number of hosts you can have, the prefix length in slash notation, in case you, if you, anybody who's configured an untangled device, you have to use the slash notation for networking. And that's what this slash means. This slash automatically has a corresponding subnet mask. And that's the equivalent subnet mask in the next column. And then you have one big column broken up with 3 littler columns, class A, class B, class C. And this is the number of equivalent classful addressing networks. If you've ever been confused in seeing a subnet mask from an ISP that you didn't understand, this website, this document will help you better understand. So when you're communicating with someone, maybe it's a VoIP vendor or a vendor that the ISP or network provider, you will be able to speak the same lingo when it comes to the IP address and how it's set up and how many IPs you're going to be allowed to have on the network. An example, one of the stories a few months ago, there was a big project where a client was moving from DSL networks to all broadband Fios. Verizon was forcing, and he even had some dial-ups. And what we had to do was get a block of 5 IP addresses, and each one I had a different router with the public IP address unique for each router, because each of them represented a different function in the auto repair and car wash combination here. He had multiple networks that needed different remote accesses for checking on the cameras, for checking on the communication of the car wash machines that had to communicate with doing the sales automatically when a car comes into auto pay. So I took the Fios router and put a dummy hub, a gig hub, right behind it. And then each line went to a different router with a different public IP address based on all of that class network info that Verizon provided me. And that allowed us to have all those different separate networks within his facility to perform the functions that were needed. That was my understanding of TCP/IP, made that a little easier to design and to make sure it was going to work. That's something that I do pride myself in. And if you really want to learn, and if you want to get more business as a consultant doing IT support and work, you need to understand TCP/IP and DNS. DNS is so important. Understanding that and understanding all the records. What's an MX record? What's an A record? What's a CNAME record? What's a text record? It's so important to be able to guide a client through a mail migration. Maybe their website's being hosted somewhere else and you need to be able to set up things. It's all about the networking. It's all about DNS. Or maybe this is not an area you want to deep dive into, and so you can always get someone to help you out and contract out. And I've done that for some clients, for other consultants, that this was just above them and above their pay grade and they didn't want to be involved. I get that. There's things I don't want to do that I'm not good at. Then you get the people who know what they're doing and you subcontract them or get them involved in the project. Wanted to pass along this link. All right, just one more link for the show notes, a quick little topic, and then I have a short email I'm going to get to, and the other emails are just going to have to wait till the next show. I want to thank Mike Cooley, who's a moderator in the chat, his Facebook post this week, and it's from Bleeping Computer. Office Depot pays $25 million to settle deceptive tech support lawsuit. And then there was a $10 million that support.com has to pay. Office Depot, which I believe is a subsidiary of Office Max, had deceptive practices in upcharging people for services and things that they did not need. And it was an ongoing practice. And that is just horrible. Here's why I'm bringing this up. Not just to warn everybody away from that, but if you're in this business of supporting clients, what a great story to share with your client. So if anybody is ever put in a position where you got to justify yourself, this is the story to quote. And this is a company the size of Office Depot. It makes you think, and you can always say, and I know this is a fact. I don't know if it's happening all the time, but Geek Squad, I know an ex-employee that would be punished if he did not upsell every single machine he touched, if he did not upsell something, regardless whether the client needed it or not. It's appalling. What about the services from Staples? It depends on the store, the manager, and maybe not even there because maybe it's coming from above. And then the individual tech, you have to get so lucky to be taken care of properly. I think this is what sets aside everybody who listens to the show, everybody who listens to Tech Vets, and what we do as a support community for our clients and have to go against these deceptive practices. I wanted to share that for that reason more than anything else, which is why we do what we do and honestly approach and honestly help and do a good job in helping our client. But they have to pay for that. It's not free. This is what we do for a living. I wanted to make sure that was communicated. And you definitely want to take a look at that article. One quick email. This is from Mike. He says, I've looked into refurbed Optiplexes, especially the 7010s, and I'm not clear if they include Wi-Fi. Do you add a wireless mini PCIe card and antenna? Well, only if they don't come with Wi-Fi. And most desktops do not, unless it's a custom build from somewhere, from a gaming manufacturer or something. Even then, I would not use Wi-Fi for gaming, even though I'm not a gamer. There is a USB AC Wi-Fi adapter that I love that gets great signals, and it's just USB. I will have a link, our Amazon link, for you to be able to purchase it. It's very inexpensive. It's like $19, I think. It might even be less than that. But I will only add Wi-Fi at the client's request. Then and only then. I'm not going to open up the machine and put a PCIe card in there. Just use a USB adapter. And here's how he signs it. Keep up the great show and see you in Grand Rapids. Mike, I am looking forward. And he's coming from Castle Rock, Colorado. So I am looking forward to meeting you. And when you hear this, make sure you identify who you are when we meet up on Friday night. I appreciate that. Thank you. That is it for tonight's show. And I mentioned Amazon. The best way for you to support the Mike Tech Show and Tech Vets, Carrie Holzman and myself, we have a shared Amazon link that's in all the show notes at tech-vets.com and mikenation.net. That link, you use that before you add the items to your shopping cart. So click on that link. Then add your items to Amazon shopping cart, and we will get a small commission. It adds up. It makes a difference. And we really appreciate your continued support of the shows. Your price stays the same. Why not help a couple geeks out here for all the work that we're doing? We really appreciate that. Thank you so very much. Also, you heard how many times I think we've used Fab's Auto Backup every day this week, and we're going to be using it tomorrow for two systems. Fab's Auto Backup 7 Pro. We cannot live without it. That's what we use for transferring the data and the settings from one system to another. And for remote support, you see, I have tonight, I'm still connected to Instant House Call with two systems right now, decrypting. And I'll finish that up tonight. And that's Instant House Call. You need remote access? Go to instanthousecall.com, download the free trial for 15 days, use the promo code MikeTechShow. I appreciate your continued downloading and subscribing to the show and all of your support, all your feedback, your contributions with your email questions. I love it. Thank you so much. And I will see you next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.